All right, look, ladies and gents, we'll try and move through this part reasonably quickly there. We've got obviously a short amount of time. Kerry and myself work with the Department of Education and Training. My role is half and looks after distance education, programs associated with distance education. The other half looks after a thing called Country Areas Program. So part of the equity programs of the Department of Education and Training, of which Priority Schools Program and Multiculturalism sort of comes in, and then distance education encompasses these areas here. So, as I said, distance education, primary and secondary, a program called the Access Program, which is where we have very small cohort schools, and they link together using technology to try and share some of the expertise across the cohorts. And by doing so, they're able to actually then get breadth and depth of curriculum into those schools. And then another part that we look after here is the Country Areas Program. And these are schools that are in rural isolated areas, and the government, as in the federal government, provides funding to those to try and overcome the adversity of isolation and distance, and we put programs into those schools there. So that's the context that we're coming from, just to give you that broader picture. Kerry also works with distance education, but she's based out of the Centre of Learning and Innovation, which is at Strathfield, and she works across all the distance ed centres and the country areas programs across New South Wales. Give you an idea of where some of these schools are. In terms of those access schools, the central schools, small cohort schools that are linking together, these are in a stage six environment. So you've got these clusters in the central west, then down towards Riverina, and out towards Wilcannia, Ivanhoe, Broken Hill, and then up on the northern borders. They've been quite successful. We've got kids that came out of there last year that were able to go on and do medicine at New South Wales University and undertaking their schooling at Peak Hill. We had others that have gone on and done agricultural economics, etc. So they've been able to actually do their senior studies in a very small community with the support of their community without having to travel away to a boarding school or travel on a bus for an hour or so each way. Distance education centres, that's the spread across New South Wales, just to give you context there on what we're dealing with. Each of the centres are a school in their own right. They have their own school code, they have their own school principals, of which we have one sitting here. And they are looking at ways in which they'll engage their students just as much as a face-to-face school will, probably even more so. In terms of the schools that we're working with, the context will be for us that geographical isolation, the distance between, I guess, everyone in those communities, the teachers, the students and the community themselves. We have a lot of newly appointed teachers which come out and are placed in the rural and isolated areas, and so how do we go about supporting them? How do we actually scaffold? We talked a lot about this morning about scaffolding, so how do we scaffold the work to support them? How do we build that community with teachers? Quite often we've got teachers going in and they might be head teacher for secondary studies, and each individual person might only have one person in their faculty, or their faculty might be spread over four or five schools over a couple of hundred kilometres. So how do you get that sense of community that you normally get in a face-to-face school? Limited access to expertise. That's been a big one for us. So how do we get the expertise coming from the schools? We use a number of ways of doing that, and I'll sort of give you an overlay of that in a few minutes. And then finally, this one here, how do we actually get this access to the technology and the subject choice? Give you an idea of enrolments. Access, 379, probably dropped a bit. The rural recession and drought has had a huge impact on our student numbers, people leaving those areas. Big issues with student resilience and family resilience. In some of those rural areas, so that's a big one that's been facing our staff. Distance education, you're looking, you can see the numbers there, quite a few FT full-time students. Single course enrolments make up a big lump of our subjects. So they're ones that say, I want to study Korean or I want to study German, and it's not available at their local high school, so they'll do it through us. And the Country Areas Program schools, about 246 schools. If I was to put a pattern of those schools across New South Wales, they start on the North Coast, the very sort of ranges of the North Coast, and then they go on a horseshoe pattern right around the borders of New South Wales and end up on the South Coast. And there's about 23,000 students that are at Country Areas Program school. Okay, so our priority areas for us in terms of looking at all of that are in these areas. I guess if we were to look at synthesising all of those issues down that are faced with rural geographic isolated areas, these are the areas that we came up with: the curriculum options, the peer interaction, and connectedness, the gap, the link between the various students. I think probably in terms of our main goal that we're trying to aim for here is to actually look at building community. And without that sense of community, we're pretty well lost. The students expect the community, the teachers need the community in terms of their peer-to-peer interactions as well. And technology for us does definitely provide that conduit to allow that to happen. It's not the only method that we've got, but it certainly is a very big way of actually linking it together. And then all the things that have come in terms of Generation Y, what are the traits that they want? Well, that conduit provides us with a lot of those hooks to actually hook them in there. Okay, so I just tried to go back and use this as an example. When we actually looked at all the issues facing rural isolation and rural issues, these are just some of them. So we did a bit of a brainstorm. What were the communities wanting? And you can see here it was, bang, you know, rural recession playing a huge part, isolation, reduced services. Sometimes the only service left in the communities was the school. Everything else had been taken away. Drought, falling populations. A whole lot, all of those things coming in, and we were having to deal with those. So if we put those in and tried to distill them down, what we'd actually come up with was, these areas here. And they were about curriculum enhancement, the ability for kids to be in their own small communities and yet still have the breadth and depth of curriculum to go and make the choices that they want and get the careers that they want without having to leave their community. The peer interaction, the sort of things that you expect your son, your daughter, your fellow students, etc., to have on a day-to-day basis. Things that we take for granted, like the texting of mobile phones, being able to go down the road and meet up with people, all those sort of things. That's what these guys expect as well, and the connectedness, being able to actually bring in all that information and bring it together as a community. And so, in terms of those last two, that's what it really is. It's about community, and it's about building community, and that, for us, is about building social capital in terms of those small communities so that they can grow. So quite often, for our focus at the Country Areas Program, it's not just about getting the teachers trained up and giving them capacity so that they'll want to stay in those areas for a long period of time. It's not just about getting outcomes in terms of the students, it's about bringing the local community and sometimes actually putting the training into the community because they're the people that stay there. And that helps us. So to do that, we're very keen to follow one blended learning environment, and Kerry's role pretty much has been around about promoting that blended learning environment and using the collaborative technologies. There's an example or a quote from a guy by the name of Curtis Bonk, which pretty unfortunate name, because if you try and search for Curtis Bonk's work within the Department of Education and Training, you get blocked. So that's definitely a worry. So for us, guys, we see collaborative technologies as being these areas here at the moment for us, and these are the various tools, I guess, that we're using to try and enhance that conduit to get the students to interact and get that connectedness happening. We're using learning management systems, LAMS. We're actually using a combination of LAMS and Moodle, and we're using Moodle and integrated LAMS into it. We're using LAMS by itself. Kerry will talk more about that in a minute, and that's the focus of this. Learning objects, obviously that relates with LAMS, or sometimes by itself. Sometimes teachers actually developing those learning objects themselves. Our biggest challenge here for us is about that sharing. We've talked about the LAMS community, etc. We're working with people such as CLI, Tim over there, to try and look at ways in which we might get this sharing happening. So when in the last session I was at, he said, we've given up on trying to get teachers to share because they're notoriously bad at sharing. And I think part of that is about never knowing whether your material is good enough to share. And so we're trying to work at how do we actually build up a sandpit where teachers can say, I want to share with this particular people in the first instance so I feel comfortable with it, and then after that, how do we broaden it out to a broader area so that everyone can share? Interactive whiteboards and graphics tablets play a huge part of the role. There's a rollout at the moment underway with the government of the day in New South Wales saying that they're going to roll out interactive whiteboards and video conferencing to our schools. So we're looking at the teaching practices that go in that in collaboration with other parts of our department, but in terms of distance education, definitely focusing on how that actually can focus the student learning and using that as a tool. Web interactive software, that's all sorts of software that has the ability to interact via the web, and it can be a whole range of things, but one of the things that we're playing around with at the moment is things like Hoots, which allows us to actually do some animation on one side, compress it down as a very small text file, down to about maybe about 50, 60k, 100k, and then transmit that to another site, and then open that up and the kids sort of interact with that and the kids are building that type of thing. But there's lots and lots of software that works in there. Video conferencing, we use video conferencing and have done from 2003 onwards for distance education to allow some of our links in these remote sites. I guess when we first started that off, it was very much about the Buddha position, where the teachers were standing there as a talking head. Now it's very much an interactive software, so I don't know that we've got the time to show you any examples, but in recent times what we've tried to do there is to use virtual excursions, where we've gone out to museums and other locations and had a link with video conferencing equipment in there, and we've linked to the education officer. So what the kids can do then is ask questions in real time, and the person at the museum can actually show them exhibits, etc., or talk to them about specific items that they need to look at. So some of the things that we've done in recent times is linking to NASA, where we've had an interview with Andy Thomas for all the distance ed kids, and certainly in terms of Burke Distance Ed, these guys just here had some of their kids linking via radio and via the satellite, and they were actually asking questions, etc., with Andy Thomas. We have a link with the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, so we're able to actually do things like a diver in the tank, and the diver's actually got a mask on that allows them to talk back to the kids as they actually show up examples of some of the things, such as the bits of coral or perhaps different types of fish species. But the point is that video conferencing is emerging as probably a technology that allows that interaction and that collaboration rather than just a one-way conversation that it traditionally has been as we've been using it in distance education. All of those coming together for us form that collaborative tools. This is the area, of course, that you put the Institute in and the reason that you're here today. So I guess, Kerry, you want to put that in?
Okay, so basically we started using Moodle and Land, as Mike said. We started off very early on working with Moodle and undergoing some training for myself and some others in the Rural and Distance Education Unit, and then working with predominantly the Distance Education Centres and the Access Schools and some of the Country Areas Program schools to open up their eyes as to what Moodle is. Some of the larger schools have already started working with Moodle and had a few courses on offer. Those courses varied in Moodle from simple quiz activities to revision for exams. In fact, we used our very first Moodle was a simple discussion forum to promote teacher sharing and interaction. And some of the centres have developed full 38-week courses in various areas, like the secondary education centres. So we've gone on from Moodle, we're still doing lots of Moodle workshops around the state for teachers in those areas, and began integrating Land as well. So we haven't had one individual Land workshop that Dylan and Leanne Cameron ran for us with distance education teachers. We've also introduced Land as part of most of our Moodle workshops, so we're providing Moodle as the framework for teachers to design their lessons in or to hold their learning objects, however they might like to use it, and then also putting Land in so they can have some controlled sequence of activities to complete as one-offs or as part of the unit and sequence through that. Also, for many of our teachers, particularly K to 6 and our preschool distance ed teachers, the whole learning management system, content management system, virtual learning environment, whatever, unless they had been a student themselves at TAFE, or they may have used Janison, or they may have come across another sort of learning management system, classroom system somewhere, it was a very abstract concept. So we started introducing, having web conferencing using DET Bridget system to introduce teachers to what that means before they then come on board with the training. So we found that that's taken a very abstract concept and given them some idea of what to expect and then whether they're ready to commit to that just yet or whether they feel that they need to wait a little bit longer. As I said, using LAMS, we've been integrating it with Moodle in those workshops that we've been running over 2 days with teachers, and also as a standalone. At the moment, we have a server hosted by LAMS International for our schools to access, and this was a snapshot taken, that might have been about 3 weeks ago, I think. But we've got close to 400 users on it now, just in the last 5 months since I've been working on the project, and quite a lot of active courses. In fact, our secondary people have taken courses in distance education and access, and really run the concept of developing those courses. It overcomes the issue of, for them, mailing out materials, waiting 3 or 4 weeks to get it back, they mark the materials and send it back to the students. There's huge time issues with that sort of thing. So for secondary distance ed, they've found that to be fantastic. And there's a lot of other courses on their own service. Distance ed access have gone ahead and purchased and having managed. This is just one of our first Moodles, I won't spend too much time on that, which was purely to support K to 6 learning in this instance for schools that have registered for the Collie modules, which are elimination tools that are given out to align with an HSIE or science certificate that students have studied. This particular one was on HSIE transport for stage one, the little kids, and it was simply to promote the teacher sharing across the state. And it was using one tool within Moodle, just a discussion forum. We didn't have to share like that. So they were able to take part in actual discussions, share photos of what students have done, where they've been related to that unit of work, and so on. Very, very interesting. I'm not sure if people here have started the uptake with Moodle and LAMS, but this very first Moodle, I think we had 74 people register. 5 chose to actually make a contribution, which was quite amazing. But behind the scenes, we realised until a few weeks afterwards that I'm guessing that it's because people at my age and that were not confident in participating in the online forum, it was very new to them all, that actually is still emailing, which kids are clearly the types of last year, still emailing the people that put contributions up here behind the scenes, so using their direct email address to contact them and share information. One of the first ones that contributed, I think we had one response online, she actually had 12 people contact her by email asking for that material. So rather than put it out there, even though it was in a secure password protected environment, that's just one of the issues that we've come across and that we're finding people are becoming more used to now, that we're doing a lot of promotion of Moodle and LAMS. Okay, with LAMS, this is a Moodle I've worked with, this was for Hay School of the Air, and the challenge was, well, show us how this is going to work with really, really young kids, because there's questions about literacy levels and can students read on the web and, you know, how do you develop your own resources, etc., etc. So the teachers there are using the satellite, they're using interactive whiteboards, and we had a look at their lesson plans, what they would normally do, and then what do they want to use in Moodle for. So as part of their training, we talked about that, and we did a little bit of pre-planning. But this model, and it's probably not that clear to see, the first topic is purely on Moodle, but the second topic is then going into the LAMS sequence. And the purpose of this LAMS sequence was to revise what the students had been doing as part of the satellite lesson and provide something that hopefully was a little bit more colourful, fairly easy for the students to log into, to access, and to be working on, not necessarily needing direct teaching instruction or direct supervision from their parents, because the parents in their situation might have little Johnny in year one, but got three other kids in primary school, distance ed, that need their support as well. So we're looking at that within the distance education network as a way of supporting, at least in that instance, the teaching and learning, and also the sharing of time amongst supervisors. Oh, not amongst, I can't go to that. But basically, what we've been doing in introducing learning is choosing